Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome back to another episode of Fly on the Wall Finance. I'm your host, Jamie Malm, and with me is my co-host, Tony Shore, who, as always, is the man who makes complicated stuff sound way more fun than it should be.
I don't know about that, but thank you, Jamie, for the compliment. I appreciate it. We'll try to have fun on the show today.
Okay, let's do that.
We will try. And today's show is big. But not as big as the new big, beautiful bill, right?
I thought maybe we were going to drop hints to see if somebody could guess the topic based on how many times we said
our topic is bigly, as Trump would say. It's bigly.
Yes, bigly. All right. It's right. That's right. It is big. It is bold. I don't know if people think it's beautiful, but it is going to have a massive ripple effect on retirees, on working families, on business owners. And that's what we really want to dive into today, is to discuss what that might mean for our listeners, for their financial future.
Yeah. And any bill this big, it's going to have amazing things in it for some people, and it's going to have horrible things in it for some people, because Congress just makes it bigger and bigger. They take out some, they add. And so there are pros and cons. There's going to be good, there's going to be bad. So I'm interested, Jamie, today to hear your take on how this is going to affect us.
Yeah, there's trade-offs for sure. So let's start with the basics. One of the not so good things, I suppose we could say, is that it is going to add $3.3 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. And we talk a lot about the national debt. It's reached incomprehensible numbers. Like, once you start talking about $30 trillion is another one, two, three, four, five, like, we're losing count at this point. Right. And so it's almost such a large number that we can't really fathom what that means.
What it even means. Yeah.
There are trade-offs. The biggest cost to that is the permanent tax cuts that are staying in place. And that's also the biggest headline for this bill.
Yes.
Those 2017 tax cuts that were part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act were set to expire the end of this year. Those are now permanent. So we are not going to see an increase across the board for taxpayers like we were set to. Tax cuts are now permanent.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that's good. But man, you talk about adding $3.3 trillion. That's real money even to you, Jamie.
Even to me. Yeah. I mean,
even to me. I kid. But yeah, it's crazy. We're numb to it now. $30 trillion is our national deficit, the national debt. That's not good. But what is that even? You can't comprehend that. That's more than our heads can really wrap around. So, obviously the tax cuts are permanent, and I know, Roth conversions have been a hot topic because we were at such a low tax rate, and taxes are at historic lows, and we thought that was going to expire. So that really drove a lot of people to do Roth conversions, which I think are a good thing anyway. But what does that mean for Roth conversions? Does this mean, people need to stop converting to Roth because they don't really have to, because taxes are going to stay low?
Yeah, that's a good question. Roth conversions have been such a hot topic for the last few years because it was like taxes are on sale, right? There is a fire sale, limited time only. We're going to see an increase starting at the end of 2025. So if you wanted to convert, there was a push to make sure we did as much as we could to diversify taxation while taxes remained low. And of course, that's a no-brainer. If I'm going to pay taxes. I can't control if I pay them, but I can control when I pay them. And when I pay them would be ideal if I pay them at a low point rather than a high point. So many people thought, well, if tax rates are set to increase and we have a $36 trillion debt, then we see the writing on the wall. I'm going to pay higher taxes in the future. So I'm going to try to convert as much as possible now. This has bought us some more time. So this is a good thing for people that have this ticking tax time bomb, like in a 401k or a 403b or a traditional IRA. None of those dollars have been taxed yet. And so on paper, it may look like I'm solid. I've got $1 million or $500,000 or $250,000, whatever your number is. But when we calculate then how much of that you're actually going to keep after we pay the tax bill, that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
If we convert some of those dollars, yes, we have to bite the bullet and pay the taxes now, but then we get tax deferral moving forward. We're not paying taxes on any of the gains, and we're never paying taxes on the withdrawals. So we're paying now, and it doesn't matter then what happens in the future to tax rates on our Roth money. So this has provided a bigger window of opportunity to continue to pay taxes when tax rates are low. Because we all know, although they're permanent, what does that mean with the next administration?
Right. Only until the next administration takes office, right?
They're permanent for now. So keep that in mind.
Right. They're only permanent. I love how they use the word permanent because no tax law is permanent. When the next administration gets in, they could change it. Congress could change it, and it could be changed when the next Congress gets in. Not even have to wait until another president. So you never know. But I'm glad you talked about that because it is important to have money in that tax-free bucket, no matter what tax bracket you're going to be in retirement, because you do want to keep your taxable income low, especially in retirement. So
yeah,
good point there. Now, there are a lot of deductions, credits, and things that have caught my eye and I know caught your eye in this bill. Talk about some of those for our listeners out there. Or did you want me to list them?
I think there's over 70. So
yes,
if we're just kind of hitting the highlights, we got a bump in the standard deduction.
Yeah.
So people have not been itemizing as much since the Tax Cut and Jobs Act because we got that big deduction, right? Last year, this year, it's 15,000 individuals, 30,000 for married people. That's going to remain permanent with an increase, right? We're getting a little bump. The child tax credit's going up. So this is a great one for parents. We get that $2,200 tax credit per child. Mm-hmm. This next one is one that I think Trump has talked a lot about. It's no taxes on tips or overtime. So think about our service folks, our people that work in industries where they're extremely reliant upon tips for their wages. This is a temporary 2025 through 2028. We're going to see no taxes on tips. That should be a huge break for some of those folks.
Yeah.
And then overtime are some of our police workers, our emergency personnel. Those are folks that a lot of time get hit with overtime, which then is pushing them into that higher tax bracket. So no tax on tips or overtime impacts a huge population.
Yeah.
We have a couple of other little ones like your interest on your new car loans and some things like that we've got deductions for. I think one of the bigger ones is in line with the estate tax exemptions remaining. We have been talking about that a lot too on, hey, I don't know a lot of people that are worth more than $26 million. And that's where the exemption is at right now for couples, but it's been 1 million in the past. It could drop to 3 million. It was set to drop to 5. Now we do start thinking about family farms and people that if it drops to 4 or 5 million, we are going to see family farms that are struggling to pass from one generation to the next, because suddenly we've got to sell off acreage. We have to sell the farm, either a portion of it or all of it, to pay that 40% tax bill. We've got some relief on that. So we have the extension of the higher estate and gift tax exemption, which is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And none of that money is liquid when you inherit a family farm. You're inheriting equipment and land, so you don't have actual cash to pay large tax bills.
Right.
That's the problem, right?
Yep. So we're talking about trillions really in lost revenue from all of these deductions. That cost a lot of money. So naturally, the government's going to be looking for a way to offset that. You know, where is the money coming from? Well, one of those places is with the SALT deduction cap. So SALT is state and local taxes. The cap was at 10,000. It's going to be raised to 40. And again, that's between 2025 and 2028. So what does that mean? Well, without the cap, people would be able to deduct unlimited state and local taxes, right? We're talking about like property taxes and that. Although we have an increase, you might initially think of it as, well, that's costing the government money. Putting that cap on there to eliminate the unlimited deduction actually raises about $950 billion in revenue. Mm. So that cap actually generates revenue while still being kind of a short-term bump for individuals.
Sure. And then there's the new, we talked about the standard deduction. There's a new senior deduction if you're over 65, right? You get up to $6,000 if you're over 65 in additional deduction from your taxes.
Yep. This one has created a lot of confusion, I think, because the way it was positioned in some of the media that I've seen is no more tax on Social Security. And that's not true. That was something that we were kind of hoping might happen with the One Big Beautiful Bill, but that did not pass. We did not eliminate taxes on Social Security. What we did get is an additional $6,000 tax credit on top of the standard deduction, on top of the already existing $2,000 senior tax credit for people over 65, we now have an additional $6,000. So although, again, like the SALT cap, it sounds like that might cost the government money, it actually, the way it interacts with other credits, it nets about $1.8 trillion in revenue. So it is generating revenue to help offset some of the other tax consequences, but think about the impact that this could have for individuals who are getting taxed on their Social Security. And I'll just give you an example. To calculate how your Social Security is taxed, we take half your Social Security benefit and add your other income. So if you're taking IRA withdrawals or you have taxable interest from investments, that gets added. As soon as that amount gets over $25,000, we start getting taxed. As soon as it gets over $34,000, now I'm getting 85% of my Social Security benefit is taxed. So with this new benefit, I get, and we'll do it from an individual standpoint. Let's say I'm, you know, right in that, maybe I'm making $30,000 or so with my Social Security and some of my interest income. Now I would get a $15,000 standard deduction plus the $2,000 over 65 deduction plus the $6,000 on the new bonus exemption. And it'll be indexed for inflation next year, the standard deduction. Now I'm really starting to cut down and whittle away my threshold income. So if I get under that $25,000 because of stacking all those deductions, now I'm not paying any taxes on Social Security.
Wow.
So that's how they're positioning the tax credit, that bonus credit, as maybe being a way in which many Americans are not going to pay taxes on Social Security. And there are some phase out limits on that. So you want to be aware of, you know, based on the amount of income that you have, if that applies to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that could be a significant help for a lot of people. I mean, but you have to know where to take money, when to take withdrawals, all of that is important to have a guidance to know how to keep more of your assets. And but that $6,000 additional tax credit to take that off of your taxable income in retirement to help keep Social Security from being taxed is good news.
Yeah, the written income plan is so important. It's why we work with our tax advisors to create a comprehensive plan. So I'm not making a recommendation that conflicts with what's in their best interest from a tax standpoint. And the CPA or the tax advisor isn't making a recommendation not knowing what I'm doing as a financial advisor. It's why we feel so passionate about coordinating our efforts, because you really don't want to be making decisions in a bubble. You want to make decisions with being able to see the whole picture. And if I know, all right, we need an extra withdrawal and we have options in which to take that from, I don't want to suggest pulling, for example, from a traditional IRA if that's going to increase taxes on your Social Security. There's a whole trickle-down effect to that then, right? Then I've increased your Medicare premiums and maybe you're subject to IRMA, and there's all these things that possibly could have been avoided if we had a plan that was taking into consideration what would be most tax efficient. So that's really important.
Yeah. Oh, that's huge. So let's move on and cover some more things in the bill. There are some really interesting things in here. I mean, the one true thing about that name, the Big Beautiful Bill, is that it is big. There's a lot here, 970 pages, I've heard. So
yeah.
So what else do you want to cover?
So here's another one that we're probably going to hear a lot about, and it's the Trump accounts. This is the government funded seed money, if you will, that's going to be given to all newborns born from 2025 to 2028, that parents can also contribute to, but government kicks in $1,000 to start it off. Well, think about $1,000 and the power of compounding over the years and what that could really mean, even if we're not adding any additional contributions. Mm-hmm. At a 9% rate, by the time they're 18, that's almost $5,000. That's a nice little nest egg that we didn't have before. So it's set to work kind of like a Roth IRA, where there'll be some rules around it, right? Where it's really designated to be there for qualifying withdrawals, like college, like starting a business. So kind of like a Roth IRA, in that we have some qualifying ways in which we can take it out. Also kind of like a 529 plan, where it's really designed to, you know, really be for college, but not quite as inflexible as a 529. There's going to be some other ways in which we can access it on a really tax efficient basis. So that's an interesting one that I think we're going to hear some about. People are going to want to know, what does this mean? Should I contribute to it? Should I do a 529? Should I still open a Roth for my kids that are old enough to have earned money? Like, where should I, if I only have a certain dollar amount, should it go into the Trump account, a 529, a savings account, a Roth IRA? Like, where do I put this money? That's where you really want some guidance from an advisor to look at the big picture and what the goal is for the child, so we can decide what fits them best.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think that's a great idea. I like that one a lot. And most of what we've talked about so far has been positive for a lot of folks. But let's talk about some of the more controversial aspects, the big cuts, yeah. Right? Some people are complaining there's too many cuts to the safety net. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, this is where the bill gets controversial. And I get it. Things get personal for a lot of Americans.
Sure.
We have to pay for these benefits somehow. There's a trade-off to everything. Oh, yeah. And the general public didn't get to weigh in and say, well, yeah, we really want those things, but not at the expense of something else. We have to take some of the good with the bad. And yeah. The downside to this bill, where you're seeing people that are not happy about the changes, is first the new Medicaid work requirements. We're going to have more stringent access to qualify for Medicaid, which could leave more Americans without health insurance, right? And sure. There's a whole trickle down effect to that. But just as a general overview, if you are a childless adult a parent with older kids, you have to prove you have worked or volunteered at least 80 hours a month. Without that qualifier, you can lose coverage. And eligibility has to be re-verified every 6 months. The other big one is SNAP, previously referred to as food stamps. These are getting stricter. More of the burden is being pushed to states. There's going to be requirements for eligibility that are work-related to be able to get these benefits as well. And that, of course, is falling on the shoulders of the parents. But where it really gets personal for a lot of people is kids are going to be the ones that feel this the most. And of course, it's not the kids that need to go out and make sure that they're working. It's their parents that have to show that they are at least doing the minimum amount of work in order to qualify for those benefits. So that's those are the biggest cuts to social programs that we're going to hear the most about. And that tends to get really personal and impact a lot of people on many levels, and nobody wants to see cuts for kids. Right. And so that's a tough pill to swallow for everybody. I think so too.
Yeah. The SNAP thing is pretty tough. But we'll see how it plays out. You know, I'm all for fairness and certain work requirements, but, again, we'll have to see how these things play out and how they're implemented and enforced. What about estate tax? There's been a lot of talk about the current estate tax limit dropping, right?
Yeah. So we just touched on this a bit ago, but I want to reiterate it because I do think this is one of the biggest things. We talk a lot about coordinating your estate plan, who gets what, and ensuring your assets are going to pass to those that you intend them to pass to. Well, when we have a big estate tax exemption, then we don't worry about it as much, right? It gives us time to put a succession plan in place, to start protecting assets, to work with an estate planning attorney. Where we found ourselves before the passing of this bill was in December of 2025, this big exemption was going to go away. And so people felt very rushed. There was a time crunch. Like, how am I going to have enough time to figure out how to protect my business, my legacy, my family farm, if this drops clear down? Now we bought ourselves some time, right? Now we have time to really look at our individual situation. What makes the most sense? What kind of planning opportunities do I have available? Because this is, although it's a permanent reduction, it's permanent for now, right? It's not something that necessarily every administration in the future is going to keep in place. And so we always have to have a contingency plan. And that's where we really encourage people to make sure you are working with somebody that will coordinate that estate planning piece of it, because that's where you make your plan bulletproof. That's where we ensure that everything that you want to have happen happens, and we don't get derailed by any surprises or legislative changes later.
Yeah, and things constant. The one thing that doesn't change is that everything changes. So that's the one thing that never changes are all the changes. So it's going to change, but we have to get our head wrapped around where we are at right now. And this is the bill that passed that we're going to be dealing with for a little while here. So understanding it is half the battle. What are your final thoughts on this, Jamie?
Well, I think final thoughts, the general consensus is that these cuts are going to give the economy a short-term boost, you know, more business investment, more spending. But like we mentioned, that comes with a hefty price tag, that $3 trillion hit to the national debt. We've got $1 trillion mark for increased defense and border security and immigration enforcement. So we had to raise the debt ceiling in order to keep the lights on, essentially. We don't want to default. And so I think where the money is being sent and the fact that we raise the debt ceiling to accommodate these other things show where our priorities are heading. Mm-hmm. And it's important to know not just on how you may be impacted short term, but also how's the economy impacted? What would be the short term impact? What's the longer term impact? So here's what I would say. If you're like, okay, I understand a little bit now more about what's in the bill, but maybe still a little fuzzy on what do I do about it? I would say revisit your tax strategy first. Have a conversation with your advisor or your tax professional, as the cuts, the changes, they should help everybody across the board, but depending on your income, depending on your circumstance, it could hurt. And so we want to know, am I in a better situation? Am I a worse situation? Do I have control over that? And you need some guidance for that. Maximize the credits where they're available, right? Take advantage of the things that are out there and don't feel like you've got to figure this out by yourself. That would be, it would be an extremely overwhelming feeling to try to decipher what does all this mean for me without having a professional to point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Really good point. So how can our listeners get the help they need with this, Jamie?
Yeah, I would say start with having a conversation as it relates to your tax situation. You can do that by calling our office. We have a tax professional that comes into our office at least once a month to meet with our clients for things like this, or of course you can go to his office. We've got a couple of different locations, but I think it's important. First things first, let's get a solid foundation and know what your opportunities are, and then let's build everything around that tax plan. So you can go to our website, which is ironhorsefinancialservices.com, or you can call the office, which is 620-377-6456.
All right. Well, thank you, Jamie. Great topic today. There's going to be a lot more on this big, beautiful bill. I know we're going to be talking about this for a while as things are revealed and as things shake out from this bill and how it's affecting people and going to affect people. But great show. That does it for today's episode of Fly on the Wall Finance with our host, Jamie Malm.
Thank you. See you guys next week. That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.